Chapter 3. Defector. 3 months later, to the nearest minute, I am loosely attached to the US desk, working on my first field assignment. This would normally be an extremely stressful point in my career, except that this is very much a low-stress training mission, as Santa Cruz is one of the nicest parts of California, and right now having my fingernails pulled out by the Spanish Inquisition would be more pleasant than putting up with Mary. So I'm making the most of it, sitting in a tacky bar down on a seaside pier, nursing a cold glass of Santa Cruz Brewing Company wheat beer, and watching the pelicans practice their touch-and-goes on the railing outside. It's early summer, and the temperature's in the mid-20s. The beach is covered in babes, boardwalk refugees, and surf Nazis. This being Santa Cruz, I'm wearing cut-off jeans, a psychedelic t-shirt, and a back-to-front baseball cap. But I can't kid myself about passing for a native. I've got the classic geek complexion, one a goth would kill for. And in Santa Cruz, even the geeks get out in the sun once in a while. Not to mention wearing more than one earring. My contact is a guy called Mo. Actually, I'm not sure that isn't a pseudonym. Nobody seems to know very much about the mysterious Mo, except he's an expatriate British academic, and he's having trouble coming home. All of which makes me wonder why the laundry is involved at all, as opposed to the consulate in San Francisco. A bit of background is in order. After all, aren't the UK and the USA allies? Well, yes and no. No two countries have identical interests, and the result is a blurred area where self-interest causes erstwhile allies to act toward one another in a less than friendly manner. Mossad spies on the CIA. In the 1970s, Romania and Bulgaria spied on the Soviet Union. This doesn't mean their leaders aren't slurping each other's cigars, but... In 1945, the UK and the USA signed a joint intelligence-sharing treaty that opened their most secret institutions to mutual inspection and exchange. At the time, they were fighting a desperate war against a common enemy. Not many people outside the Secret Services understand just how close to the abyss we stood, even as late as April 1945. There's nothing like facing a diabolical enemy set on your complete destruction to cement an alliance at the highest level. And for the first few post-war years, the UK-USA treaty kept us singing from the same hymn book. But UK-USA relations deteriorated over the following decade. Partly this was a side effect of the Helsinki Protocol, when even Molotov agreed that occult weapons of the type envisaged by Hitler's Thule Society minions were too deadly to use. A lot of the pressure came off the alliance. When it became apparent that the British intelligence system was riddled with Russian spies, the CIA turned the cold shoulder. Thus, a background of shifting superpower politics was established, in which the moth-eaten British lion was unwillingly taught his place in the scheme of things by the new ringmaster, Uncle Sam. I suppose you could blame the Suez Crisis and the Turing debacle, or Nixon's paranoia, but in 1958, when the UK offered to extend the 1945 treaty to cover occult intelligence, the US government refused. My colleagues in GCHQ listen in on domestic US phone calls, compile logs, and pass them across the desk to their NSA liaisons, who are forbidden by charter from spying on domestic US territory. In return, the NSA echelon listening posts give GCHQ a plausibly deniable way of monitoring every phone conversation in Western Europe. After all, they're not actually listening. They're just reading transcripts prepared by someone else, aren't they? But in the twilight world of occult intelligence, we aren't allowed to cooperate overtly. I don't have a liaison here, any more than I'd have one in Kabul or Belgrade. I'm technically an illegal, albeit on a tourist visa. Any nasty reality excursions are strictly my problem. On the other hand, the days of midnight insertions, bailing out of the back door of a bomber by midnight and trying not to hang your parachute up on the Iron Curtain, are gone for good. Gone too are the days of show trials for captured spies. If I get caught, the worst I can expect is to be questioned and put on the first flight home. My way into the country was more prosaic than a wartime parachute drop, too. I flew in on an American Airlines MD-11, filled out the visa waiver declaration, occupation civil servant, purpose of visit, work assignment. And no, I was not a member of the German Nazi Party between 1933 and 1945, and entered via the arrival hall at San Francisco Airport.